So this fall, we're going to take a look at spiritual practice. Spiritual practice is the doing part of religion. So we're going to ask, what is it that people do to activate and deepen their spiritual life? After the first of the year, January 1st, we're going to switch to the why question. Why engage in a spiritual life? And we will start in those first winter months with personal spiritual goals for our individual lives. But people aren't religious just for themselves. Religion is also a social project. So we will, in the spring, look at various social goals of religion, what people hope their religion will do for all of us, generally. First, though, the spiritual practices, of which there are dozens and dozens. And if you already engage in an identified spiritual practice, I hope as we work on that these next couple months, you'll feel affirmed and maybe find some way to make your practice even stronger. And if you don't have a spiritual practice, as I just said, I hope you'll be inspired to begin one, or at least to examine the question for yourself, what do I do with my faith? What do you do to make your faith stronger and deeper? And what do you do to express your faith in your life and into the world? How do you live your faith? I'm going to organize the varieties of spiritual practices in this way. First, looking at spiritual practices that people do within a spiritual community, like this one. Spiritual practices like worship, hymn singing, maybe reading and discussing a book together, religious education done in a classroom-like setting, gathering together for regular fellowship, like a church picnic, or for regular support, like a healing circle or a covenant group. And then in October and November, we'll look at spiritual practices that people tend to do privately or individually. Some practices in this category include things like prayer or meditation practices, movement practices like yoga or tai chi, or walking a pilgrimage route, or journaling, or hiking in nature. Some of these things you might actually do with other people around you, like meditation, who are doing the same thing, but you tend to have a private experience while you're doing it. And then finally, in December, we'll look at those spiritual practices that some people do in public, either with or for people who are outside their own spiritual community, spiritual practices that take place in the public sphere. Activities here include things like evangelism, that guy who stands on the corner with a megaphone shouting Bible verses, social action, public witness, parenting, and teaching. Now, last week, I started by giving some definition of what I mean by the word spiritual, because my intention is that this be a meaningful exploration of spiritual practices for everybody in the room, including people who don't think of themselves as spiritual or who don't use that word. So just to review, what I mean by spiritual is that spiritual refers to that part of being human where we engage with the existential questions of identity, purpose, and meaning. Every human person asks, who am I? What should I do? And why does it matter? Some people ask those in sort of a casual way. Others are more engaged with those questions in a profound way. But we all ask them because that's how we chart a path through life. And it's how we organize our days also. Who am I? What should I do? And why does it matter? Identity, purpose, and meaning. Now, how you answer those questions, or the context in which you answer those questions, defines your theology. And your theology can be atheistic or theistic, strictly materialistic or naturalistic, or it can include immaterial and supernatural elements. And in a Unitarian Universalist church, we welcome multiple diverse theologies across the entire spectrum. Any theology is welcome here, as long as it is grounded in and leads back to supporting the values that we name in our Unitarian Universalist seven principles. But every person of any theology, and even those who claim no theology, wrestle with those spiritual questions. Who am I? Is there a self? Is there a soul? What does it mean to be human? What should I do? Am I responsible for others? Should I prioritize my personal dreams and happiness or work for other people? And why does it matter? Who cares? Is there any objective way to judge good and bad or better and worse? Does my life matter only to me? Are there social goals that I should align my life with? Or do I owe my life to something big and universal like a God? So if you can agree that we're all spiritual by that definition, then a spiritual practice is a way to regularly engage with those questions, answer them more fully and confidently for ourselves, and then let our answers guide our life choices. That doesn't mean necessarily literally asking those questions during your practice, although you might. But what a spiritual practice always does is deliberately put ourselves into a setting where we commune with the psychological entity, whether it's within our own minds or beyond, depending on your theology, where we find answers to those questions, and then listening deeply to what that voice, internal or external, tells us. But also importantly, a spiritual practice is a practice. It's an action that you engage in regularly. A practice is like practicing the piano. Every week or every day, you sit down, and whether you're in the mood or not, you do your work. And sometimes it's successful and inspiring and life-changing, and other times you just sit there for an hour and nothing much comes of it. And then you come back the next day and you do it again, or you come back the next week, whatever your schedule is. Now, the spiritual practice that we all experience most regularly in this room is worship, the experience that we're having now. And worship is also one of those words that can trip us up. Sandy and I were both thinking about the same thing this morning. So let me also remind you of what she said this morning about what worship means in a helpful way. Worship comes from an old English word, which I won't even try to pronounce. And it is the same root that we get the word worth from. So to worship is to assign worth to something. And that something does not have to be a god. Sandy mentioned things like humor or beauty or justice, those kinds of things. Some gods that I hear about aren't worthy of worship, in my opinion. The word God might not even apply to any actually existing entity in the universe. So to assign worth to a fantasy would be silly, or simply wrong, or maybe dangerous. But to give worth to something beyond yourself is crucial. To hold that there is nothing of worth beyond yourself is also silly, or simply wrong, or dangerous. So worship in a Unitarian Universalist context is not about naming the object of worship for you, but asking you to name for yourself what is worthy. Maybe it's the seven principles, or a simple value like peace or love, or maybe the object of worship is the fellowship of this community, or of all human community, or the planet itself. Maybe the object of worship changes each week depending on the theme of worship for that day, or maybe you worship a particular god or goddess and what they stand for, or you worship a large, encompassing spirit that holds many worthy qualities. And then to worship, the action of worship is for each of us to lift up that worthy thing and to spend an hour, or an hour and 8 minutes, perhaps, paying honor to that thing, determining to center our lives more securely around that thing and listening to hear what wisdom that thing has to give us. Okay, so worship as a spiritual practice is that regular returning to communion with that something of worth that we hold as the best and the highest organizing principle in our lives. And here's what I want to say about why we worship in community. Why is worship a communal spiritual practice? Now, worship itself, our liturgy, is a collection of many spiritual practices. We sing, we pray, We drop a stone into a bowl of water. We light a chalice. We make an offering. Most of what we do during worship is something that you could do alone, privately, as an individual spiritual practice. Even like hearing a sermon. You could just stay home and find a TED Talk on YouTube. It's not like I'm the only person who has anything spiritually wise to share this morning. So why not save yourself the trouble and lower your carbon footprint by just staying home on Sunday morning? Because the real and unique benefit of communal worship is not the communion with the something that we worship, but the communion with the community that we worship with. And you know that. That's why we do this together. That is why we sing together. It's why we pray together. It's why we share ritual together. We share our joys and sorrows out loud, and we hold them together in community. There's that palpable energy and power that Michael Kimmett was talking about, of focusing the attention of a room full of people on one child as they light the chalice. There's the symbol of gathering the resources of an entire community into one offering toward one goal. And there's the power of an entire community hearing one message and then going home, all of us thinking the same thoughts, and coming back later in the week, remembering the common experience that we had. There's the spiritual discipline of laying aside for 1 hour, or 1 hour and 8 minutes, your own preferences and your own interests about what you want to hear or what you would sing or even what you want to be, and giving up that individual will, which gets so much attention throughout the rest of our lives, and instead resting in community and being led by an order of worship that's out of your control. This people, my people, this congregation, and my church.